Good morning, Yuma. This is attorney Adam Hansen, co-host of Life, Death, and the Law. For this week's episode, we wanted to release a director's cut of stories that didn't make the first cut. For many of you who don't know, these episodes are filmed in advance, and we have to cut down to 45 minutes for radio. The following clip is from last week's episode with Chris Thompson. Enjoy.
So my daughter is she just turned 17. And she's got her group of friends, and I'm always up for boating. But that age group, for some reason, everybody's got to have the right agenda at the right time. Otherwise, we're not going. And so she'll say, hey, I want to go boating. Great. I'll get the boat all ready, get it hooked up. Oh, so-and-so can't go. I'm like, so what? So let's go boating. We got two or three. Let's go. No, so-and-so can't go. Can't do it. Two or three times after that, I'm like, hooking up the boat and unhooking it's the worst part of the whole trip. Yeah. So I said, okay, we've got this kid. He grew up boating. I know he knows how to back up a trailer. I know he knows how to handle a boat. I'm going to take him out next time when we go as a group. He's going to do everything. He's going to hook up the boat. He's going to drive it out there. He's going to launch it. He's going to trailer it. And then I'm going to just make sure that he knows what he's doing with my boat. And he's going to be your designated boater guy that you take out. And so we did that, and did great. Now, here's the thing that we got major credit, major props for, and the things that I hate the most. The boat came back, and the tubing rope got sucked into the impeller, which happens, right? You always got to have somebody watching the rope on rope patrol. And the impeller, you know, it's not that forgiving. You get that rope sucked up in there and it's tough to get out. So they got the rope sucked up in the impeller and they came back, and I was like, no big deal. I can yank an impeller in like 10-15 minutes if I need to. Normally I can get up in there and just get it out myself. So I got up underneath the boat, and they're still, you know, sitting there in their swimsuits and towels. And I pull out the rope. I got it out in 5-10 minutes, and like, oh wait, we were working on that for an hour and a half. So that's dad's strength. That's sure. A testimony to dad's strength there. And I got the rope out, and I noticed there was a gouge in the bottom of the boat, the lowest part right near, right in between the jets. And I said, hey, you know, there's a gouge right here. And the guy that I lent it to, he immediately goes, oh, we must have hit something. I'm sorry. And he jumps down on his back, crawls under the boat to take a look at it. And another person in the group, whom I'm related to, I won't name, but that has just recently turned 17 years old, said, we didn't hit anything. There's no way that was us. And I'm like, I'm the one underneath the boat. I know this boat. I know when there's a gouge in it and when, you know, this something's happened. And props to the kid that like jumped down on his back and was like, oh, really? What happened? And jumped down and got to look at it before the automatic denial, that knee-jerk reaction of it wasn't me type thing. And he's like, oh, shoot. Well, how can we fix it? When do you want to fix it? And that right there was like, I chose the right guy. I will lend you my boat anytime.
Okay.
It's going to happen. Things are going to happen with that. And if you're willing to fix it and take responsibility for it, that just boosted him in my esteem or whatever.
But this guy's not related to you.
He is not yet.
Okay. So you had nothing to do with his
upbringing?
Yeah.
No.
No, that's a good story.
No.
Good story.
And yeah, this just happened a couple weeks ago. And for days, I tried to bring it back to bring the moral of the story back, and I was talking to my family member, and I said, listen, what super impressed me was about how this kid took responsibility. And again, we didn't do it. I'm like, listen, I know my boat. There wasn't a gouge when you took it out. There's a gouge now.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody did it in between.
Yeah.
And we call that in the law, res ipsa locator. The thing speaks for itself.
Okay.
And so there you go for having a dad or an attorney for a dad. And I go, all I want you to say is that you did it. I just, that's all I want. She's like, but we, I'm like, listen, this kid, gold star, you're in the black right now. All I want to hear is that you did it. That's all I want to hear.
Yeah.
It took her like 3 or 4 days and her mom like saying, your dad's not going to let this go.
Right.
And then finally she's like, sorry, Dad, we probably did it. I'm like, no, you did do it.
No. Oh, yeah. It never works.
Take the probably out of there.
Yeah.
And just let the rest of it ride. So
yeah, better to be up front. I remember one summer, just before summer, so it was right before graduation. I had several older friends that were graduating. And so it was like a senior ditch day, but I wasn't a senior. But I ditched anyway, and we took jet skis out. And we had fun on them all day. And then during the day, one of my friends and I, and it was a light tap. We bumped into each other.
Uh-huh.
But it must have been, we didn't notice any damage. In fact, we looked. Oh, I didn't see anything. But it must have been just the right place of the hull where it's maybe the weakest.
Yeah.
So then after spending the day riding and running those things pretty hard, we brought them back, and as we were unloading them, we noticed a crack, you know, in the hull of that jet ski. And my friend's parents didn't know that we took them out. They were his. And my parents, I don't think, knew that I was not there, that I ditched and
gone. Oh, yeah. Oh, so lake. There's a lot on the line.
There's a lot happening here. And so we dropped them off, and everybody kind of pretended to not see the crack. Me and two other guys were kind of like, nah, that was probably there before. Because we bumped, but it was not much.
Uh-huh.
Certainly not enough to crack the hull. So we all felt, okay, well, that's fine. About a week later, we're sitting at dinner at my house, my parents and me, and my brothers, I'm sure, were there. And we get a knock at the door. And open the door, and it's this guy that that took the jet skis out with us.
Oh, yeah, your friend.
And he said, hey, my dad is getting the jet skis fixed. It's $400. You were one of the guys that bumped it, so I need $200. Like, says that to my mom at the door. And I'm, of course, behind him just going, oh, no.
Where's my brown pants?
Yeah, exactly. So it always finds you.
Yeah.
You don't escape anything. So it's better to just man up and say, yep, no, I did that. You know, here, you know, let me know what it's going to cost, or I can come help you fix it, or I'll take care of it, or I'll replace the... Return the trailer with a
same thing.
Repaired tire.
Absolutely.
Or, you know, all those it's things just be better to do that.
It's,
you know?
It's acknowledgement.
Accidents.
Of the.
Nobody's angry.
And even if it's not an accident, even if it's like, you know what? I was so stupid. I did this. And if you just say it, it's like we all do stupid things.
Sure.
But it's the unaccountability that's what takes
wasn't me.
Out. Yeah. Wasn't yeah. me or, you know, sorry this happened and. That's it. And like walk away.
Yeah.
No,
this kid got in trouble. Then I got in trouble.
Yeah.
You know, and $200 in 1994.
When you're 16 years old.
Yeah. Would have, you know, yeah. So it's not, yeah, it's better to just hop down. Where's the damage? How do we fix it? I'm on it. That's who you want.
I got a good story to follow up on that. So I was in high school, and there was this girl that I liked, and I wanted to get her attention. It was a Friday night, and so we go to her house, me and my buddies, and we start throwing snowballs at what we thought was her window. And
all romantic stories start with throwing things.
At snowballs, them. Yes, yeah. Exactly. And so I'm throwing snowballs at her window, and threw one a little too hard, busted the window, and her dad shouts out, "What the? Who's out there?" I'm like, "Oh crap, wrong window." And so he comes bolting out of the door. He is the town prosecutor, the county prosecutor. And so we're running for our lives. And, you know, he's this old guy. He's probably, I called him old at the time. He's probably 45. He's
probably younger than you are now.
Exactly. Yeah. And, but, you know, yeah, we jet out of there. And we got to the safety point where we were out of range of him being able to catch us. And we're like, whew, that was close. And then, you know, it hit me. It was like, this isn't right. We got to go back. And so we go back, and it's probably 11, maybe midnight. It's late. We woke him up doing this. And so we go back, and we knock on the door, and we're like, here we are. What, we'll pay for it, obviously, but we're sorry that we did that. And he was very impressed with it. He goes, yeah, dang right, you're going to pay for it. And, you know, he has some choice words for us that night. But afterwards, he actually didn't make us pay for it. And I'm kind of in that situation now. I could see, you know, some kids doing that at my house. And if they came and fessed up to me, I would have a lot of respect for those kids. That would really make a big deal. It really would impress me. But I did that one time. Now, there's plenty of times I didn't, right? But that was one time I did. I'm so glad I did.
Did you end up getting a date with the girl?
No, she showed up on Monday and for some reason was upset at me that I broke her window.
Yeah.
Okay. I was like, listen, I was trying... And of course, you can't talk straight to girls.
No, no.
You always got to pretend like, you know, I don't care. Like, I was just there just trying to harass you.
I was just throwing snowballs. Yeah. Whatever.
Your house is just on the way to the other house we were going to throw snowballs at. And no, I didn't acknowledge that it was because I wanted her attention. And if I got attention, it was always doing something stupid that would annoy her. So, sure. No, never worked out.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good. Maybe had she been impressed, then you wouldn't have the wife you have today.
Yeah.
And there's no snowballs here.
So advice to my younger self, snowballs aren't as impressive as they first appear to be.
Sounds like a good idea. Had you described this plan to me prior, I would have said, this sounds like a really good plan.
Yeah.
That girl's going to be impressed.
Good morning. This is attorney Sean Garner, co-host of Life, Death, and the Law. For this week's episode, we wanted to take a minute and release a director's cut of stories that didn't make the first cut. For many of you who don't know, these episodes are filmed in advance and we have to cut down to 45 minutes for radio. The following clip is from December's episode with Chase Thompson. Enjoy.
Okay, I have an easy question for you. We'll get away from politics because I can see you're all squeamish about it.
Yeah, you're making me nervous.
At the dinner table, you're not nearly this squeamish.
Well,
I can put a mic on you there.
Well, where's the dinner table?
I told you we needed to start offering food.
Don't even give me a meal.
I know. I told them we needed to start doing that.
I offered you water.
Disarm our guests.
You did.
So, what number did you graduate from your high school?
High school 7 or 8. I think I know I was top 10, and the only reason I know that is because I had a friend who was really upset that she was 11.
How many kids in your graduating class?
400 or 500.
Okay, so you graduated in Tucson?
No, here.
No, here.
Here in Yuma.
Cibola, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay, and then you went on to U of A. How did you do there?
I did really well. Yeah, I mean, I did well. Again, the OCD tendencies have some good that comes out of them. There's an evil side to it too, but yeah.
Then you went to the Navy. No, you went to dental school.
Dental school.
How'd you do there?
So it's an interesting question, but I was ranked second. And when I said that, I had a friend who looked at me and said, "Oh, I'm also ranked number 2." So I don't know what the answer is, but on the transcript, the only reason that becomes important is when you apply for residencies, they want to know. So I think what my school did is they just ranked GPAs, and everyone with a certain GPA, if there was only one person with a higher GPA than you, you're ranked second. Or if there, So there could be 14 of us who are all ranked number two.
Okay.
So I don't know how that, I don't know how they figured that out. I frankly don't care. It used to matter a lot to me, and I've come to realize it doesn't matter at all.
So did you play sports in high school or growing up? What did you play?
So I played baseball and I played golf.
Oh, that's right. You're a really good golfer.
I was a decent golfer that I could play with anyone. I wasn't ever competitive at a state level or really good, but I could be on the course and not look like a fool.
Do you think that played into your success later on in life, playing sports, organized sports?
I think it did. I think it did. I don't know that that's the only avenue to gain those skills, but I think I definitely learned a lot on the golf course. You're only competing against yourself. Every time you practice it, you're trying to just be better than you were last time.
What position were you in baseball?
I played pitcher and first base.
Nice. How'd that help? Did it help at all? Or are you looking back, you're like, it was fun to do, but didn't really learn any life skills.
No, I did actually. And I still remember, and I actually had a conversation with my coach who coached me, what was that, 30 years ago? And we were playing, rolling double plays, and he would hit us ground ball and we turned two, and then he looked at us and just put his hand, I thought we did a fine job. But he looked at us, he just threw the bat down. He's like, guys, what are we doing? What are we doing? Good habits. You have to develop good habits. He said, get your head in it. Because he could tell we were going through the motions, but we weren't thinking about what we were doing and we weren't getting better with the practice. We were just doing what he asked us to do. And so that's a lesson that stuck with me.
Really?
Yeah. I also remember a lesson from another coach that I told him the same thing. Actually, I saw both those coaches, different teams. But I remember a play that I messed up, and I made the mistake that ended up ending our season and that made us lose the game. And he didn't even remember it. But I told him, I remember that, and I threw my glove down, and I was so upset. And he just walked over, put his hand on my shoulder, said, hey, pick your glove up. We don't do that. And I still remember that. That was, you know, we don't act like that. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, there are lessons that I learned that were really helpful.
What was the play?
So it would have been great if I'd pulled it off. But I was playing first base. There was a runner on third. There was one out. And the next run would have ended the game for us. And so the ground ball was hit right to me at first base. And I took the extra second to walk two steps over, tag first to get mm-hmm. the batter out, and then threw it home. And it was a real close play at home. I thought I had time. And no, the right play was pick the ball up, throw it home first, get that out, worry about the guy in first later. But I was trying to get a double play in the inning and get us up out the bat. Mm-hmm. And didn't work out.
So does that experience, has that helped you in reflecting on other difficult situations that you've been in where you felt like you were on the verge of failure and you thought, you know, I got past that? Or has it been an albatross around your neck where it's like, I don't want to fail again, and so you play it safe? I want to, how does that play through your mind? Because I've had similar experiences like that, but how has that played out in other situations that you've been in?
Well, I mean, the lesson I took away from that, and I think it's an evolving lesson as I grow and mature, but the lesson I took out of it was, initially it was, hey, if you're upset, that's not going to help anyone, and you're just going to, you know, make everybody think you're an angry baby on the field. Mm-hmm. That was the first lesson. But then when, you know, you get thinking about it more, you're like, well, no, it's a game. I tried really hard. It would have been great if I'd pulled it off, but I tried it and failed. And that had consequences for the entire team. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if everyone on the team, my guess is today, no one remembers that play except for me. But it was one that I failed. And I felt like I had failed. And I don't think the other players were holding that against me. But I'm sure they were thinking, why didn't you just throw it home, mm-hmm. right? But that that happened. So I guess the evolving lesson would be, you could take that any direction you want. Either try hard, try your best, and let the chips fall where they may, or it's okay if things don't work out. We lost the game, but that's it. Who cares? It's another lesson when I talked to this coach, and he had no idea what I was talking about. He didn't remember it. So it's funny to me that things... We experience the same event, and for some people it has a lasting impact. For some people, they forget about it the next day.
The reason I ask that is because I saw this YouTube video, and it's viral, and it's this coach talking to these kids, and he says, there are winners and there are losers, and we're going to go out in that field, and at the end of the game, we're going to be one of those. And for all of you that have dads, it says it doesn't matter if you win or lose as long as you have fun. They're losers. And I thought, oh, wow, well, I'm one of those dads. Because I was super competitive in sports. It was wrestling. And it absolutely mattered whether you won or lost. And we were of the mentality that it didn't really matter how you won, right? It only mattered that you won. And so I went through my high school experience and gained a lot of skills and learning perseverance and working past pain and waking up when I didn't want to and doing things that are hard, because if you can learn to do things that are hard, you can achieve things that you never could otherwise achieve. And all of this character building that was happening regardless of whether or not my hand was raised when the time ran out. And I get that now. And that's something that I want to instill in my kids, because for a long time, I lost my very last match as a senior against somebody that I had wrestled many times before and beat and actually never lost to before. But in the match that would have made me a state champion as a senior, I lost. And I felt like, well, that was a waste. I just wasted that whole season, all that time, all that running, all that conditioning. It was a waste. And I felt like that for a long time. Until I would stay up late and study, and my wife is like, how, you know, she'd come out of bed and say, how can you possibly be still studying? Like, aren't you exhausted? And I'd say, well, yeah, but I've got to get it done. And I reflected back on those were skills and character that I had built through sports. It's you don't give up, you continue to go until you're done. And that mattered so much more and contributed to the success that I was able to achieve. And it didn't matter what the score was or whether my hand was raised or not. And so I try to tell my kids, listen, if you're out there and you're playing good soccer, you're playing good volleyball, you're swimming well, it really doesn't matter if the person next to you ends up higher on the podium at the end of the day. You've achieved what you've achieved. They can never take that away from you. And I get it that sports has winners and losers. And I like that fact because it pushes you to work harder than you might otherwise. But what you achieve from it has nothing to do with what the scoreboard says.
I agree with that. I think now as dads, we're more like, it doesn't really matter if you win or lose, but I want you to finish. Don't just throw your glove down and walk off the field and quit. Mm-hmm. Finish and finish strong, you know? And I think, did you watch the Tyson fight?
I saw parts of it, yeah.
Did you watch that, Sean?
I did. I wish I hadn't.
Why?
It was painful.
Well, he finished the fight.
He shouldn't have walked in the first place.
Well, I mean, you got to give it to the guy.
I don't think so. I think that he...
Let his legacy stand?
Yes. It was a painful way to remember him. Just like I think Jordan should have stayed retired the first time.
Okay. Well, he finished, and it was painful to watch. I felt bad that the announcers were like ganging up on him. I thought, show a little bit more respect than that, you know?
Well, they're sports, though. And that's what I like about sports, is it's real.
Yeah.
You don't have to say, well, this person ought to, or this person should, because they're ranked higher. It doesn't matter. If you're number one seed, you still have to go out there, and you still have to win. And every year with, you know, the March Madness, there's always a big upset, and I love that about it, because there's no there's no given. You have to actually perform. Doesn't matter if you're ranked number one, you go out and show that you're number one, otherwise you're knocked out of the tournament, and the person mm-hmm. that actually showed it on the court is going to move forward. And I think that's what life is too. And again, there's winners and losers in life, as well. And that means it doesn't matter what you feel like you're entitled to because of what you've achieved in the past. You've got to perform now in order to merit what you receive now.
We actually are out of time.
Well, you finish your thought on the Tyson fight. He walked out there. You thought he was a good guy for walking out there, and he got beat up for it.
He did beat up. I thought he did fine. For that age, I mean, I think of my dad, probably similar, like maybe a decade younger than my dad, and my mm-hmm. dad would look probably the same. Probably the same as that. <It's> like, but they're laughing all the way to the bank. I think you got, what, $20 million for that?
Yeah.
See,
I would go out there and get punched by Tyson, too, right here on my chin.
No, and that's where I think, like,
Was it disingenuous?
Yeah, the system broke, right? We were more excited about the spectacle than we were about the true competition of it. And we're paying this guy to walk in and get beat up. It's like, you know, watching a guy go in with a orangutan, right? It's like, it's not a sport. Like, we're not watching a sport anymore. We're watching a spectacle.
Did you watch the fight?
I watched it after the fact, so it wasn't live, but yeah. I watched parts of it afterward. To me, it was more of like a medical experiment than anything else. It was
kind
of,
yeah.
Can this guy at 58...
That's kind of what I was thinking,
too. ...tune his body to be anywhere, any semblance of what it was when he was 25.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And compete against this guy half his age.
That's what it was to me as well. It was, is it possible to yep. compete with... And that the announcers... I mean, they said no. By the midway, second round, he was done.
You know? Well, Jake Paul, that's his name, right? Jake Paul?
Jake or the brother, I don't know. I don't know which one.
Yeah, Mr. Paul.
Is he the champion of the world right now?
No.
No.
So who is he? That was the big thing. He was a guy that...
Ask your kids, they know. They know all about him.
He's an influencer on social media that happens to box. Right?
He does pretty good, though.
That picked up boxing late in life, though.
Exactly. That's why I thought, well, what is this? This is nothing. It's kind of like the Billie Jean match against, you know, the washed-up tennis player that was a guy, and it was a battle of the sexes. This guy is 40-something years old. He hasn't played professionally forever. Billie Jean is in her prime, and she loses the first time, and then she has a rematch, and she wins, and that proves that girls are as good as guys. And it's like, well, we're really not, you know, comparing apples to apples here. And that was the same thing here. It's like, does this prove that he can still be the best? And it's like, well, he's just fighting some guy that just happens to tick off a lot of people that we want to see be punched in the face. It doesn't really prove anything other than we want to see him punched in the face.
It's fun to watch.
I don't know enough about boxing. I just think it's, I like the...
I'm
there for the nachos, right?
That's right.
I actually totally dislike boxing.
You do?
Absolutely.
I didn't know you had such a passionate dislike for it.
And it's because there's such a clear contrast between boxing and wrestling. In wrestling, there is no granted. You can go win the NCAAs, and then if you want to be on the Olympic team, you got to go start at ground zero at the Olympic trials, and you got to work your way up, and you got to wrestle those guys. And every one of them's gunning for you. And the guy that got beat out in the first round at the NCAA tournament, he could end up beating you out at the Olympic trials. Whereas in boxing, it's like you've got your promoters, and there's very limited amount of fights that you have. Uh-huh. And if your promoters are good enough, then you're going to get a big fight, and you're going to get a big purse, and everything's going to work out well for you. But you could be great. Like, I don't know, have you heard of Butterbean? Uh-huh. Right? He never fought Tyson. And it's because he didn't check the boxes as somebody that people wanted to go watch. But he was an amazing boxer.
It's not a sport where you can have a round robin and just decide who's the best. Let's have everybody fight everybody.
That's right.
Well, yeah, I hear you to say
it's not true competition.
I hear you to say you don't like the system.
It's
not that you don't like the sport of boxing.
That's right. But the sport of boxing,
I thought it was because you just didn't like to see blood and people hitting each other.
No, I'm fine with that.
Okay. So it's a system. Down with the system.
Yeah.
This reminds me of a song. What is that song? What else, Chase? When we had your brother on, he began our show with things that he hates.
Yeah.
What's one thing that you really hate?
You told me at dinner. I'm what surprised it doesn't go property taxes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's the biggest scam. You think you own your house? You do not. You're renting it from the government.
Yes.
Yeah.
So what is it about property taxes that you hate?
Again, why should, if I decide to remodel my kitchen and I get permits through the county to do that, suddenly my house is worth more and they decide, oh, well, guess what? Now you pay us more. Mm-hmm. Your house is more valuable. You owe us more rent. And that's what property taxes is. It's renting the property. And the more you improve it, the more you pay in rent.
But if I let my house totally go and become dilapidated, mm-hmm. it's not worth very much, now I can pay less in taxes.
Now you can pay less.
That's why I do that.
Even though it becomes a fire hazard, mm-hmm. you know, or, you know, some type of attractive nuisance to kids, it's, right?
Exactly.
I forgot. That's a legal term of art.
Yeah.
Nice little throw in there.
Thank you.
Attractive nuisance.
Exactly.
I haven't heard that since law school.
So property taxes, I think they're... You talk about income tax being unfair, property tax.
I was lamenting to an accountant about that once. And he made the comment, well, don't you like your streets to not have potholes? Don't you like this and that or the other? Mm-hmm. I'm like, mm-hmm. I can deal with potholes. You know, like I don't need to pay my property taxes. I didn't tell the government, take my property taxes and maintain the roads, which they don't anyway.
Yeah, but that same road that leads to my house leads to 100 other houses. And not everybody pays the same tax rate. It depends on stupid things like, well, did you add a pool? Oh, yeah, yeah. Did you add, you added a block wall. Okay, it's just a money grab.
Well, and that's all it is. So if you had asked me what the tax system ought to be, my response would be you pay taxes on the very first dollar that you make. And you cap out at a certain level. So instead of being, it would be the absolute reverse of what it currently is, because I'm not using the roads more because I'm providing more opportunity or because I become more efficient at what I do. I'm using the roads a certain amount up to a certain point, and now I shouldn't have to pay the full cost of my use of the roads if I certainly can't afford it, right? But so I think day one, first dollar that I make, tax me, we'll call it 20%, right? And I'm paying into the system. But once I pay into the system, let's call it $100,000.
Mm-hmm. You're capped.
I'm done. I've paid my contribution to the community. Now I can go on and make $1 million, $2 million, $3 million. I've paid my contribution. I'm making now other people capable of paying their contributions and making it better. But I should not have to continue paying more and more into the school systems just because I make $1 million or $2 million and I still have the one kid or no kids. And that's where I think we've got it totally. We've been so brainwashed into thinking the more we can make, the more we ought to be able to give. Well, we should be willing to give it, but they shouldn't be able to take it. It makes no sense. I'm not taking more out of the system. In fact, I'm not using Medicaid because I'm successful. I'm not using other health benefits. In fact, I'm probably healthier on my own because I have healthy habits that drive me to this level of success. So I'm taking less from the system, but I'm being compelled to pay more.
That would be an easy system. You would just say, okay, and you could combine that with a minimum threshold.
Yes,
too.
I don't even have to report my income after I pay the first $200,000 in tax.
The IRS just says you owe whatever it is, $100,000 in tax. If you pay us $100,000, that's all we care about.
Yep.
And if you pay us less, show us that you make less.
Correct.
Kind of like a deductible, like your health insurance deductible.
Right.
Well, you
either max it out or you don't.
You wouldn't have any deductibles. There'd be no, they wouldn't choose winners and losers.
But what he's saying is the deductible for once you level, right? You pay up your deductible for the year and then
maximum out of pocket.
Max out the deductible, then go get your surgeries and all that stuff.
I like that. John?
Then go to Chase and get your root canals.
Why don't you talk to somebody and make that happen?
Who do you know?
That would be nice.
I need to talk to about 60 to 70 million people to make that happen. But
you could say, okay, if you make less than, what did we say, 20,000, 30,000, you don't pay any tax on that.
No.
But between 30
dollar one, you're using the system the very first dollar that you make.
That's actually true.
And you're getting disproportionately more benefit out of the system than you're contributing. So dollar one, you pay a percentage.
Kind of like a flat tax. So it's like a
20%.
Hybrid. Yeah, flat tax, deductible, kind of hybrid.
I like that.
We just fixed the world right here.
You did. Okay.
I don't know what else to do then.
Our job is done.
This was a productive podcast. We did it.
We did it.
Congratulations, guys.
That's it.
Our last clip for this week's episode is from our episode with Jeff Stoner. It's funny you say, as parents, we get so much paper. We're inundated by papers coming home from the school. Or now it's like, now it's on your phone. It's just text after text.
Right.
And so at a point, at a certain point, you're just like, I'm just going to mute that because it's just onerous in my day. But I was going through some old paperwork of mine, and I found some old documents from when I was in elementary school, one of which was titled Corporal Punishment Policy. And it talked about we have the right to spank your kid and all this stuff. I'm like, dang, those are the good old days. I remember if you got sent to the office, you're probably going to get a ruler.
Right.
And switched, right? Do you think we should bring that back?
You know, I think that we do need some more disciplinary action. Now, beating a child. I know that I had to go pick my own switch when I was a kid.
Yeah.
You know, I remember the belt.
You're like this small, right? Smallest thing you can find.
But at 55 years old, I remember those things. So I think that there needs to be a certain level of discipline for sure. I don't know if being able to physically put your hands on that child is legally allowable nowadays.
Yeah.
So there might be that. But I know for a fact from talking to parents that are having issues that the discipline factor is just not there. And I've talked to the superintendent about that. I've talked to some teachers. I've talked to some parents. And one of the biggest reasons that kids are leaving the public school system and going into private schools or home schools or charters is because of the lack of disciplinary action. Bullying is a real big issue. And I call bullying everything, whether it's verbal harassment, threatening, pushing, you know, there's so many different, when you go into definition, there's about 8 different things that I call bullying, even though it's not. And you're like, verbal harassment. Well, you're bullying me because you're calling me names continuously. Yeah. But it's not. It's verbal harassment. It's not bullying according to their definitions. To me, the whole encompassed bullying scenario is what makes the kids leave because there's not being anything being done for disciplinary action. The student that's being the perpetrator is being sent to the principal's office. And then more often than not, they're being sent back to class with a verbal warning. Mm-hmm. And that verbal warning is a second and third verbal warning. I don't want to say that they're not doing their job, but I think that they're being told that by the higher ups that mm-hmm. we cannot suspend. We cannot expel. There is those things that do happen, but there's also those kids that, you know, are being continuously bullied and nothing is happening for those children to protect them. So then therefore the parents pull them out of school and they go somewhere else. And you can see that the numbers are they're kind of steady, but I know that we're projecting decline year over year, just like 0.5%, 1%. But one of the biggest issues in that is that we have a bullying issue. We're not answering that bullying issue appropriately, in my opinion. And because of the lack of disciplinary action, people are leaving the school system.
Do you believe in a child protecting themselves?
I do. 100% I do. First and foremost, when something happens to you, you need to report it. And you need to report it formally. Because what I'm finding out too is you can verbally say whatever you want and report as much as you want and tell the teacher. Mm-hmm. But if it is not put on an actual document, it never existed. Mm-hmm. As far as administration is saying, well, no, that didn't happen. Well, yeah, it did. But it wasn't made formal, so in their eyes, it never happened. Sure. But yes, 100% report, and then not only report, but document, as you know, turning in the complaint form. Mm-hmm. And if it continues to happen and the kid is pushing you or is doing something to you, in my opinion, you have a right to defend yourself. You know, obviously, you don't want to start the fight.
Sure.
First and foremost, you want to prevent the fight. But if you don't have a choice,
yeah,
then you need to defend yourself and do what you have to do.
Did you ever get told growing up, don't throw the first punch?
I have been told that.
Yeah.
I have been told that. I studied Kempo karate.
when I was younger. Yeah, through Arvisos.
Mm-hmm.
So I did study karate. I did wrestle. I do have some fight skills.
Mm-hmm.
And you are taught when you are in those training rooms, whether it's wrestling, jiu-jitsu, karate, any of those training methods, you are not to be the aggressor.
Mm-hmm.
That is first and foremost. You are there. This is protection for yourself,
mm-hmm.
but you use it as a last resort. First and foremost, again, is try to talk it out.
What I found growing up was, you'd always have these kids every once in a while. There'd be a fight, right, at school. It's fun to watch and everybody, but usually it ends up where those people, once they fight it out, I mean, in our day, that happened.
That's
right. After school, we're going to meet at this spot. Everybody knows it's basically UFC now, right back then, amateur UFC, and the kids would fight it out. They'd duke it out. It'd last maybe 30 seconds and then it's over. Most of the time, in my experience, those kids ended up being pretty good friends, once they got through that whole issue.
Right.
But it took that fight to get it out. I wish we would do that. I wish we would just let them work it out and then, not with weapons, but hand to hand, let them do their thing. I think they're going to work it out.
I think so. I mean, nobody wants to fight. At least I don't want to fight, no. and we want to be able to have that conversation, try to work it out. But there's times that you just got to, you got to let it go. And back in our day, we didn't have the cell phones.
That's true.
So it was, if you had something to say, you couldn't hide behind a screen and say it.
That's true. Yeah.
So that's where I think that nowadays it's so easy to be able to intimidate, to bully, to do those things because you're doing it behind a screen. It's so easy to blow up your chest and be that tough guy when you're behind the screen.
Yeah.
But if you're face to face with that person, I think the conversation would be a whole lot different.